Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. The Mark Cox Morning Show.
Listen to both sides.
The bottom line is,
I respect that. We don't agree.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Just to find a voice. Who is this guy? He's saying what we've been saying forever.
I don't know how to put this.
Mark Cox.
I'm kind of a big deal.
Well, it adds excitement, doesn't it, folks?
The Mark Cox Shortlist. Brought to you by Eggers Heating and Air Conditioning. Call Eggers.com.
Officers located the suspect, a 51-year-old Milwaukee man, deceased.
My deepest condolences to the victims and families.
The president took unprecedented steps to protect the American people from the spread of this disease.
He contributed to every Democrat's campaign.
I consider myself a socialist.
I humbly ask our country to care for our planet.
We will not have the Green New Deal.
Sometimes I wake up and I think it's 1920 and not 2020.
Every time I hear that, I laugh. The latest and greatest hit from Joe Biden this morning. A good Thursday morning to you, and happy that you're with us this morning in here along with Trisha and Denise and keeping up with all the coronavirus news that's going around and some breaking news in the college cheating scandal. Aunt Becky says she has new evidence that proves she didn't know the huge payment she made to Rick Singer was a bribe.
Baloney.
How do you feel about that, Mark?
I don't know. I'm kind of torn. I like Aunt Becky so much.
Let's not get her in trouble.
No,
oh,
I just...
She looks so good.
I feel sympathetic.
She couldn't have possibly been this nasty
I feel
cheater.
Sympathetic for Aunt Becky.
Why?
Why?
Because I liked her in that show.
Oh, my gosh. There's nothing to do with it.
This is the worst. This is the worst
I'm teasing.
Thing I've ever heard.
I'm just kidding you.
There
I'm
should
just
be a law.
You.
You get off, you know, if you're in trouble because you're cute.
Mm. No.
She's the one that bothered me.
Didn't work
for
Rod Blagojevich.
She just wouldn't admit it.
He's not
no,
cute.
No, she's in trouble.
Just zero accountability, pointing fingers, taking advantage.
And then she
so
walked
entitled.
Into that courtroom like... Like, whatever.
It's fine.
No one's going to do anything to me. I'm Aunt Becky.
Her daughter that's in question here is on a yacht taking selfies on Instagram. Like, we are so above
hey,
it.
Don't hate. Appreciate. Come on.
Appreciate
I'm just kidding.
Her cheating.
So, yeah, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Hey, we're... I am just kidding. We're keeping an eye on a lot of stuff, including some legislation that was debated last night, introduced down in Jeff City, that would strip... universities like Washington University, who have these big endowments, it would tax them on those endowments. I mean, we're talking potentially tens of millions of dollars a year in taxes they would have to pay if they were violating the law by providing abortion services to Planned Parenthood. And it's an interesting approach here that we're going to talk about to one of the folks who supports this idea. There was a hearing on it last night down in Jeff City, and that's coming up here about 7:37 this morning. So be sure and stay tuned for that. Right now, though, let's get to our guest, please. Former Senator Jim Talent joining me today, as usual, on this Thursday morning. Jim, good to have you on.
It is good to be with you, as usual.
Absolutely. We've been debating facial hair and coronavirus and all kinds of things. Did you watch or hear any of the president's news conference yesterday?
Yeah, I was able to watch some of it. I had to go out to a dinner. I've read a lot about it afterwards. I liked what he had to say, and I like Pence being in charge of it. I think not only is I think Pence is a very able guy, but I also think it sends the right signal. And so I think that, you know, the plan is very clear what they're doing. They're aggressively using public health measures, that's quarantines and other kinds of similar measures, to slow down the disease at minimum. I mean, if we can keep it out, that's great, but at least slow it down. And then they're doing a four-point plan, basically to prepare for it while, you know, they're using the extra time to get ready if and when it does come. And from what I'm reading, they're hitting all the right points. They're stocking up on protective gear for healthcare workers. They're exploring therapeutics very aggressively. That's, you know, that's medical countermeasures, things to reduce the virulence of the disease. Trying to get a vaccine as quickly as possible and looking at the point of care diagnostics. So these are all things they should be doing. They're certainly going to be spending enough money, $2.5 billion. And that's the first tranche, buys a lot. So I like what they're doing. And I think the president's message was, look, we're just going to keep calm and carry on. And as the Brits say, that's the right message.
It's important, particularly given what happened in the stock market the last couple of days, which I believe was a complete overreaction. Not that there shouldn't have been a bump, because clearly it's impacting exports and imports and all of that. I understand that there has to be some impact on it. What bothers me the most is when I hear people like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, who never waste any time in trying to weaponize something against this president. The politics of it just stink. I mean, be honest with me. What difference does it make if the president asked for $2.5 billion or $8 billion? Chuck Schumer seemed to suggest he's doing something wrong by not asking for $8 billion to fight this.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I think it's very irresponsible, and I think it's a mistake on their part. I mean, for one thing, I would really get informed on this issue. This is not an issue, because it's one obviously the public cares about and should care about, where you can go and read the message points, you know, from the half page memo you got from the staff, and yeah, this is going to work. I mean, it's, you know, it's not going to work, and it would not be the right thing for the administration to go down and say to Congress, just pass a blank check and give us $50 billion, and we'll figure out how to spend it. For one thing, Congress needs to be a partner in this, which means that you need to tell them what you need the money for, why you think it's going to cost that much, other things that you're considering, and actually put an amount on it. And if they need more money, they'll get more money. So if they want to participate constructively, that's welcome. But no, this is not the right way of dealing with this. This is a major problem, and we all need to react in a measured way.
Yeah, I would agree completely. Hey, let's talk about the debate and what's going on in South Carolina. Let me play a bite here. Go to cut number two, please.
This day, 30 years ago, Nelson Mandela walked out of prison and entered into discussions about apartheid. I had the great honor of meeting him. I had the great honor of being arrested with our UN ambassador on the streets of Soweto trying to get to see him on Robben's Island.
So apparently even Snopes, is, which does not have any sort of conservative bias, is calling out Biden for making up stories again. Yet he's still the front runner in South Carolina. What are you expecting out of this vote on Saturday, Jim?
I think Biden is going to win. I think the question is where the expectation bar is set and how much he wins by. I think he's going to hang in there. We're going to see three or four people. You know, as Klobuchar said the other day, why should I get out? I mean, even if you're losing, why get out? I mean, you're getting a national platform and you have a base of support. I think I said this on the show a couple of months ago. The trend now is for people to stay in even when the, you know, the outcome becomes more and more clear, because it advances their political interest to stay in. So I think you're going to see three or four people continue to stay, including Biden. And Bloomberg has the money to stay, so you know, he's going to be in it, unless it's just a disaster for him in Super Tuesday.
What do you think it means for the future of the Democratic Party? I mean, you know, a lot of people who are Democrats who are pretty middle of the road, common sense. I know some of these folks. I have them here in the studio. I've had people in the studio recently who are not moderate, middle of the road Democrats. They're progressive leftists but they're concerned about a Sanders nomination. They're deeply concerned about what it's going to mean for further down the ticket, and a lot of them are having second thoughts on whether or not this is good for their party.
Yeah, you think? One thing that I can say about Bernie is it's just 80 years of experience have gone through him without stopping.
Yeah.
Okay, so he has not learned his version of socialism. He likes to talk about the Baltic countries, and fair enough, you know. But they're not socialists in the sense that Bernie is talking about. They have higher taxes there, and they have a bigger social safety net. They also have a very vibrant free market, which is a result of very deliberate policies by their left-of-center parties. In other words, they understand you have to produce the wealth if you want to redistribute it, and you have to redistribute it in a way that actually achieves the goals you want, which means you don't reach back, you know, to 1932 in order to, you know, to develop your policies. And I think there's a lot of people across the spectrum who are going to be very concerned about that. So, I think it's a problem. I agree with Now, I understand why Pelosi said what she said, because that was a good poll responding. She has to protect her people running for re-election in the House. And it's a very difficult problem because, yeah, you can attack your party's front runner, but that doesn't help the people down ticket. All that does is demoralize the supporters of that person in your own party. So it's a real problem for her and for others like her. And we'll see what they do.
Well, you know, I give, like I said earlier, you know, I'll give credit where credit is due. Glenn Beck, the national talk show host, is the one who brought this up. But he did some research on Sanders, and one of his senior advisors is a guy named David Serrata, who's been a journalist and a known progressive journalist for many, many years. He wrote an article in 2013 titled "Hugo Chavez's Economic Miracle." The Venezuelan leader was often marginalized as a radical, but his brand of socialism achieved real economic gains. Here's a guy that 7 years ago was embracing Hugo Chavez and what he did to Venezuela. It's amazing.
You know, I expect we'll find quotes from Bernie on that. We're going to see that happen if he becomes a nominee. A lot of the people he has around him have been, you know, saying that, and I expect he has also been saying nice things about people who turned out to be authoritarian, you know, dictators, because when the facts threaten his preconceptions, he goes with his preconceptions and maintains them. And I just think it's going to be a real issue. I think it's a big problem. We don't know. I mean, it's a volatile and unpredictable situation because we don't have a stable equilibrium. I know I'm going to sound like a political science professor, which I'm the furthest thing from it. But I mean, we don't have a stable governing sort of equilibrium in the country, and haven't really since 1994. So it's the people are closely divided. And so it's hard to predict, but I'm not sure they'll be so closely divided if Bernie's the nominee.
No.
We'll see, though. I mean, it's, you know, strange things have happened.
Well, you know, you've got the possibility. It looks like a very real possibility that even if Sanders comes in a close second in South Carolina, his lead is going to be hard to beat very shortly thereafter. And, you know, Amy Klobuchar hanging around, why not? Because he's not going to name another white guy to be his vice president. Let's just be honest about it.
And I think Warren is playing to be number two on that ticket and doing a good job of it from that standpoint. You know, I'll introduce another thought here because we're getting to the stage where this is really important. And I remember this from the 2008-2012 cycles. This will rapidly get to a point where if you want to figure out who's really ahead and how far ahead they are, you have to know how the delegates are selected in each state, and it varies widely. You know, the caucus states, primary states, proportionate selection, congressional district selection, and then you have to go through it state by state and sort of and have a good educated guess about what each candidate is going to get if you're going to try and figure out whether somebody's going to have an absolute majority. And it's not a, I mean, you really have to dive deep into this whole process. So there's probably only three or four people in each campaign who really have studied that stuff.
Yes.
And what happens at this point is, you know, they get on the line with their supporters and donors and go through the states and explain why they think their candidate's going to do well or not. I'm not saying they agree on everything, but it gets very, very complicated. And so we're probably after Super Tuesday going to enter a 2 or 3 month period, you know, where that is going to be the order of the day.
I'm sure. Jim Talent, our guest this morning. Jim, the FISA warrants are being debated again in Washington right now. They're coming up on an early March deadline, or these things are going to expire. I don't know about you. I mean, and I'm interested in your take on this. Obviously, I was a supporter of this when it first came along. I think there was a very good reason for it. I think that the Mueller report led us to a couple of big holes in the process that have given a lot of people reason for pause, that there aren't enough safeguards built in to protect innocent American citizens.
Yes, I am deeply concerned and I mourn over what's happened to the FISA process, because I come from the first principle I come from is that we have to have robust intelligence collection in order to deal with the terrorists, the subnational movements, you know, as well as the nation states. But we have to know who the bad guys are and where they are and what they're doing. OK, so my propensity is to support this authority. But, OK, the whole deal was premised on the idea that you would put safeguards within the executive branch and effective oversight within the Congress from the political branches, in addition to this court check, you know, the FISA court, so as to protect the constitutional rights of American citizens. And it's very clear that broke down. I mean, Carter Page as an individual has gotten lost in this, but I mean, his rights were just, they just trampled on him. You're not supposed to do that to American citizens. And he didn't do anything wrong. I mean, he worked with the FBI. he was an active informant or source for them for years. And so I think this, I'm sorry, I've got a little cold.
Oh, that's okay.
It's not the coronavirus.
I'll take your word for it, but you can just stay over there on the phone.
Anyway, right, I'm on the phone. But it's really, I mean, it's very bad. So they have to, I think, I hope they don't get rid of it. I guess that's how I would enter this debate, that I don't want to get rid of it. But if it might be the only way to send the right message to the intelligence community. Look, if you're going to do this sort of thing, we're not going to give you the. You're just going to have to figure out another way to get the intelligence without this, and maybe then they'll listen. And I'm not talking about, you know, the thousands of men and women who do this all the time. I'm talking about the higher levels.
Yes,
this is bad. I mean, it's and you know, I've said this a number of times. It was the thing about the Mueller thing that, in terms of the longer term, bothered me the most. It was just wrong what happened, and they have to clean up that act now. I'll be interested to see what Bill Barr has to say. I have a lot of confidence in him. But, yeah, this is something they need to look at very carefully, and I hope responsible people on both sides are going to take the lead.
It's a great point, Jim. And I always want to go back and remind people that the innocent people who were offended, maybe Carter Page, all these folks were ultimately not guilty of what they were looking at them for. But the danger of this is that there are people capable of unmasking the names of people who weren't the targets of these FISA warrants, including Susan Rice, who admitted doing it dozens of times.
Right. That's a major problem. See, one of the issues you get with this is it's only supposed to apply to foreign communications.
Right.
Well, what if, you know, somebody calls somebody in the United States or has a communication in the United States. So if you're going to find out about the foreigner, you got the American on the other end. And the way the deal was, okay, fine, but you can't get access. We were not going to reveal the identity of the American, and we're going to protect that person's privacy, right? You shouldn't have the government sorting through all your communications because somebody from a foreign country called you. You need more than that. Remember, we're not talking about a classic warrant where you get probable cause that John Smith or Jane Doe has committed a crime. If you can get that, then you go to a federal judge and you get a warrant. And that's Fourth Amendment compliant. That's fine. We're talking about intelligence collection, a sort of a much more generalized approach where you're gathering a lot of information on a lot of people who you don't think necessarily have committed a crime, but you're trying to track down nefarious characters who want to engage in terrorism and that sort of thing. So under those circumstances, you have to protect the privacy of Americans because they have rights under the Constitution.
It's scary
and
stuff.
That broke down here.
It did.
I don't want people sorting through all my computers. They'd be pretty bored if they did, but I really don't want doing it.
Well,
so, yeah. I mean, this is something where this is an opportunity for Jerry Nadler and the Judiciary Committee to do something good. So I hope Jerry really pays some attention to this.
Let's hope.
And in a good way.
Let's hope they do. And if you feel passionately about it, call your elected congressperson today or senator and tell them, because they're going to be voting to reauthorize this here shortly, it looks like. Jim, appreciate your time, buddy. Thank you.
Yep.
Take care of that virus.
Yeah, will do.
All right. Talk to you soon. Jim Talent there, a former U.S. Senator, joining us this morning, bipartisanpolicycenter.org, where he's working these days. Back in a minute, more on this hearing on abortion funding and local university. Hey, welcome back. We were talking about this a little bit earlier. What is an abortion collaborator? Well, is it somebody who kind of tries to do an end run around the existing law to provide abortion services? There's a big debate on this in Missouri and how we fund, how we allow Planned Parenthood to operate. Planned Parenthood doesn't think it's fair that they have to be held to strict standards. But a lot of pro-life legislators are holding a hearing in Jeff City last night. There's a bill pending that might hold places like Washington University accountable. And I think that's an important thing for us to talk about. It's why I've invited my next guest onto the show this morning. She is Janique Stewart. She's joining me. She is a pro-life advocate. She's been active in the Life Training Institute, and she's been following what's going on here in Missouri. Janique, welcome into the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on. Give people an idea what's going on in this hearing yesterday down in Jeff City.
Absolutely. So it's House Bill 1522 that was sponsored by Missouri Representative Jeff Shawn, and it does two key things to bring what's going on in darkness to light with regards to this abortion issue. Number one, it provides a taxing mechanism that taxes the endowments of higher education institutions if they are affiliated with or if they provide medical faculty to abortion facilities like Planned Parenthood, or if they provide medical fellowships to train their medical students to perform abortions, and then it will tax those endowments at a 2% rate. And Washington University has billions of dollars in endowments. And so this taxing mechanism brings to the forefront who is participating in what. But the second part of this tax bill, it also provides a tracking mechanism. And what that does, it actually sets a 10% tax on sellers of fetal organs and tissue, which provides a tracking system so we know where they're going. Now, a little background with Washington University. A lot of people don't know that in 2006, they actually implemented a fellowship program. It's a medical fellowship program that includes up to $20,000 a year toward loan repayment. But this medical fellowship abortion program, it was the brainchild of Dr. Philip Darney, who was out of the University of California, San Francisco, and they head up the Bixby Center for Global Reproductive Health. And so far, this medical program has trained up 150 abortion doctors. One of those doctors here in Missouri is Dr. Colleen McNicholas, and she herself was quoted in Marie Claire magazine saying she kills up to 31 children a day.
Wow.
At the Central West End Planned Parenthood Clinic. So this really is a big deal if they are not providing, if they're providing faculty to abortion clinics, major problem. But secondly, if they're also in the abortion industry, not only performing these abortions, but now also purchasing their fetal tissue and body parts and organs to be used for research.
Janique Stewart is my guest. You know, I think it's important to point out here the debate that was held recently over the licensing of the clinic in St. Louis focused on whether or not the state had the right to come in and hold this clinic to certain standards, as in who the doctors were that were providing these abortions, right? And whether or not those doctors had privileges at local hospitals, which seems pretty common sense to me. In the event of an emergency, you should be able to follow your patient to a local hospital and make sure that they have life-saving medical aid rendered to them. And the reason the clinic argued that they didn't have to follow that guideline is that they didn't employ the doctors, that they actually were coming through Washington University in the hospital system, right? So changing this law or taxing that would kind of hit Washington University right in the pocketbook. They've been using this loophole to skirt the law.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that a lot of the donors who donate to Washington University, I don't believe that they know that Washington University is in the abortion business. I also don't think parents who are sending their children to Washington University to get a degree to become a doctor or work in a medical field, I am certain that they probably don't know that Washington University is potentially going to offer a program or actually has a current program that actually trains students how to perform abortions. So I think this is really a major problem. I think it is eye-opening, and I think it's going to really cause them to give an account for where their money is going and where they're providing faculty. And then, of course, how they're also using these body parts.
Interesting, because correct me if I'm wrong, Washington University would be the only school in Missouri impacted by this, correct?
Yes, they're the only one that we know of right now. Absolutely.
And I'm not a big fan of, you know, so-called sin taxes or taxing somebody to get them to do something or to stop doing something. But in this particular case, it's important to know that if indeed this became law, it would hit Washington University in the pocketbook to the tune of about $160 million a year that would go into the Missouri budget because they have an $8 billion endowment.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes, it is amazing. But I also think that we the people have to push back and we have to stand up for what's right. And like you said, you know, most of the time people are, you know, we have hesitation about any type of tax programs or any taxing penalties. But in this kind of a situation, what we're talking about is preying upon the most vulnerable members of our society who have an inalienable right to life. And so ultimately, we want to see Washington University get out of the abortion business altogether. We don't want them training their medical doctors to perform abortions, and we also don't want them using these precious aborted babies' organs to do research on them either.
Amen. I couldn't have said it better. Janique, for people who aren't familiar with you and some of the work you've done, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I'm actually a pro-life speaker and apologist with the Life Training Institute. And so I travel all over the world, and especially all over the United States, going into universities, going into high schools, doing conferences, training people to defend the pro-life position using science and philosophy. A lot of people will discount a faith-based argument, but what they cannot argue with is the science that is crystal clear that from the very beginning of each of our development, we were living, we were distinct, we were whole human beings, and that each of us has an inalienable right to life.
I love it, and I appreciate what you do. You know, when I Googled your name earlier in preparation for our interview, I came up with an article about Cornell University disinviting you to speak after they found out that you're pro-life.
Yes. Well, and it wasn't so much that they disinvited me because I was pro-life. They actually pursued me to come and speak on the pro-life issue at their school, at their, it's called the Cornell Political Union. They actually wanted me to come and speak, but what they had a problem with is when they investigated my background, they know that I actually hold traditional conservative beliefs when it comes to sex. I believe that sex and belongs in marriage, and I believe that marriage is the union of one man and one woman. And they had a problem with that. And at one point, I was told over the phone by the representative there that they compared my conservative views as they could not have me on the campus because they felt that my views were kind of like having someone on campus who was pro-Holocaust and pro-slavery.
That's just stunning. The tolerant left strikes again, right?
Exactly.
yeah, thank you. Hey, Janique, it's a pleasure having you on here, and I look forward to having you on again in the future. Thanks for all you do.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Mark.
You bet. Janique Stewart there joining us this morning to give you more on what's going on down in Jeff City. We'll keep an eye on that, and maybe we'll get Bob Onder and some of the others who are backing this on the air, State Representative Jeff Shawan as well, to see how it's progressing down in Jeff City. Tell you what, quick break. Time for your phone calls coming up, 314-241-9797. J.J. Carafano and Chris Wallace in the 8 o'clock hour. Stay tuned.
If you're feeding a person a crap sandwich with a smile, it's still a crap sandwich.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Colonel West, for those words of wisdom. Let me get to Kevin here on line three, following up on our conversation there with Janique Stewart. Kevin, how are you?
Thanks, Mark. I'm fine. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes,
how
sir.
Are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. Hey, I just want to let you know, I worked for WashU for 4 years, and with that university, it is all about their public face. It has nothing to do with how ethical they are or whatever. You just wouldn't believe the stuff that happens behind closed doors, not at liberty to talk about it. But, again, they are the biggest hypocrite, academic hypocrite, there is in the city of St. Louis. And, again, it's just not WashU. Any other prominent university like Cornell that you mentioned earlier, but the university, I hope this thing goes through as far as taxing
their endowment.
Their endowment, thank you, because they're really big on that. They protect that. That's what keeps them running. Kudos to Jeff City for putting the scare into Washington University.
Well, it ought to get their attention, I would think. I'm guessing they're probably putting an all-out assault on this bill down in Jeff City.
Exactly. Yeah, but again, they don't like bruises on their reputation, and this is a self-inflicted one. So thanks for taking my call, Mark.
You bet, Kevin. Thank you for the phone call. I appreciate that. It'll be interesting to see how the Post covers this story, because you know the angle that that they're going to take on it. This shutting down of Washington University's effort to provide health services for women. I'm sure that's how they'll couch it. That since abortion is indeed a health service, apparently in the eyes of the left in this country. Hey, let me get to Rick. He's been on hold here for a while. Rick, good morning.
Hey, morning.
What's going on?
Well, I was hearing you talking about that Hugo Chavez and our buddies in Venezuela. I've talked to plenty of them folks, but not there in Venezuela. I talked to them like close by in Panama and not too much in Colombia, but like quite a few of them actually were down there in Argentina, which Argentina is probably the number two worst country that I know of down there, at least that I've been in. Because, like, that 1 year I was there, the $100, $100 peso bill was the biggest. And then shortly after, they went to a $200. And then the next year, they went to a $500. And now it's whatever, stuff like that.
Just because of inflation, I'm sure, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. They messed up big time on that. And, like, you go out to use a clothes washing machine, like, here, you stick so many quarters in and you're done with the inflation. You got to get a bag full of quarters about, and then you hope the machine will hold them all.
Well, you know, Rick, it's great to hear those stories from down there, because so many people who haven't traveled there had no idea what Chavez wreaked on that country. So thank you for the phone call. The reason he brought that up is that one of Bernie Sanders' chief advisors, a senior advisor to his campaign, wrote an article praising Hugo Chavez. He wrote this as recently as 2013. A guy named David Sirota, S-I-R-O-T-A, bragging about regular Chavez, about Chavez, and about what a boogeyman he's become. At that time, the Bush administration had railed against him and all this stuff. You know what that country is like these days? It's become like it was once one of the richest countries in the world. They've got all the natural resources, all of that stuff. Hugo Chavez takes over. He nationalizes the oil companies because he claimed that was a natural resource and the money belonged to the people. And today they're broke and they're destitute and people are going hunting in the zoo down there because they have no food. I mean, it's a mess what's going on in Venezuela. And that's a great example of socialism. Let me tell you what. Just talk to anybody that's ever lived under that, and they'll tell you. I talked to a friend yesterday, in fact, and you may get to hear him on the air here shortly. He grew up in communism and socialism, and he fled that for this country. And he said it's the greatest country in the world because it gives you the opportunity to rise above your birth standard, whatever your parents, you have the opportunity to succeed. And you don't get that in a socialist country. He said it's the one thing people don't understand. What did Ronald Reagan say about it? That the people that don't understand socialism because they don't understand the human spirit. You can guarantee everybody a hot meal and a bed to sleep in. You get that in prison. What you don't get in socialism is the ability to rise above your circumstances, and it's just so true. You just can't say it enough, and it's why I continue to be stunned that Bernie Sanders, a 40-year socialist by his own admission, is about to be the Democratic presidential nominee potentially for his party. It's a surprising turn of events. I bet JJ Carafano knows a thing or two about Venezuela. He knows a thing or two about a lot of things. He's coming up. It's kind of a big deal. We're going to get him on here at 8:08. Chris Wallace about 8:37. And we're even going to check in with Tom Ackerman and find out the latest on Jay Bomeister coming up at 8:48. Stay tuned.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.